Support for WPR comes from Stone Harbor, a Door County resort and conference center with a restaurant and pub overlooking the historic Steel Bridge in Sturgeon Bay. Live music and event schedule at stoneharbor-resort.com.
Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. This is one of my favorite Garden Talk shows of the year because we are broadcasting from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, to kick off Bayfield in Bloom. And we have a wonderful audience here, and I know there a lot of them are going to be asking questions about their gardens. And if as you listen in, I hope you'll have some questions or comments about yours as well, or maybe it's your lawn, or maybe it's your trees, as we visit with our three experts. Jason Fishbach, one of our experts, is the UW Extension Ag Agent for Ashland and Bayfield Counties. Great to have you back, Jason.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks for coming back to Bayfield every year. It's a great opportunity for our region, and hopefully have a good show.
It's a lot of fun. Don Kissinger has been, I think, every year, the 12 years that we've... it's been 12 years we've been doing this. Don is the Urban and Community Forest Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and great to have you back.
Thank you, Larry. This morning we had a great time with fourth graders at Bayfield Elementary planting a tree for Bayfield's
Arbor Day.
So he kicks off Arbor Day festivities every year. And how many trees? Probably about a dozen trees have been planted over the years then.
Yeah, and we plant them in different locations here. But it's great to have the kids here. And we go through the whole process of the tree planting. And they get their hands dirty and wet. And as I told them, it was neat because this is the only place where I can actually walk 10 yards and get the water from the pristine Superior Lake Superior. So it's kind of fun coming up here, so I enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. And another guy that usually is probably around there to help you out, Art Odie, with us as well. Art's is a horticulture consultant, semi-retired from a botanical garden and arboretum management. And Art, great to see you again.
Good morning, Larry. I hope you noticed that we have held back the daffodils so that it'd be an absolutely full bloom as you drove into town.
I was there, beautiful. I'm telling you, and all this bright yellow daffodils that you see as you come into town, which is a great hello. It's a great hello from the community, and also as you drive around town, of course, you see lots of them as well.
And I hope that you will roll down your window as you're looking at the daffodils, because I know it's your birthday, and we've taught the robins to sing happy birthday.
Well, I tell you what, I have a wonderful birthday card. We'll probably post some of this up on my Facebook page. Jennifer may have already posted a great card from the Master Gardeners of Ashland and Bayfield Counties, and I have got a birthday cake that looks like a cupcake. But it's a big cupcake, and it's and we'll post a photo of that up too on the Facebook page. So we'll go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you'll get to see some photos of probably of our audience and of our guests and all the good things that are going on here. Well, let's talk gardening, for goodness sakes. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Jason, in this part of the state, like everywhere else, things are a little behind, I would guess.
Yeah, this is 2 years in a row. We are slow. But I'll tell you, other than, you know, we're all tired of it, it's great for the fruit trees, which we depend on so much up here. The slower the emergence of those blossoms, the better, because we avoid these late spring frosts. So we're doing just fine.
And what about trees, Don Kissinger?
Well, I guess the biggest thing for people to be on the lookout for is emerald ash borer. As we know, this came to the U.S. in the early 2000s, and it's moved in Wisconsin in 2008, and it's just moving around. And the closest area to here is in Douglas County in the city of Superior. So that's a concern for folks throughout the state.
Yeah, it's going to be a little expensive, all, but at least we now have some control for... Well, I don't know what's reasonable, but I think around $50, $60 a tree, you can actually control it.
Well, you're correct that there is a control, and there's some very good controls And it depends on, obviously, the size of the tree and how affected the tree has been. You know, if you want to preemptively deal with it or if it's started to show some signs and you can still inject the tree, but that's something that a professional arborist would need to do. But yes, we have very good tools now compared to 5 years ago or 10 years ago, much better.
And Art, let's talk with you a little bit about, you know, this northern part of the state, shorter growing season than certainly in the south, although the south growing season isn't all that much longer. Do you have some favorite perennials that do well up here?
Well, I think we can grow all of the, normal garden perennials up here that you would grow anywhere in the state. So to say that I had any favorites, I wouldn't really say that because we can grow almost anything because we're right next to the lake. But from the standpoint of things that are in bloom now or will be in bloom very shortly, I really like the hybrid rhododendrons and azaleas that have come on the market in the last few years. The PJM rhododendron does very, very well up here, and that'll be blooming shortly. The buds are nice and big and fat. And there are a lot of other, orange lights and northern lights, white lights, azaleas that have been introduced in the last 10 years or so do very well up here. So that adds a kind of a little exotic touch to some of the things that we can do in the backyard here.
Yeah, nice little dimension to it. Well, let's take some calls and questions from the audience. First, let's take a caller from Green Bay, Vivian. Vivian, do you have a question for us?
I'm here, yes. Thank you. Happy birthday, Larry.
Thank you.
Yeah, the question is, we've got pine trees on our property, and we're right on the shores of Green Bay, just north of Green Bay in Door County. And I noticed, this is the first time I've been up in several months. I hadn't noticed this before, but the pine trees, they're all brown. And I went out and touched them, and the needles were dropping. And I don't remember this happening through the winters before. The ones on the shore, there's three of them. They're all brown. And I noticed there's a lot of brown on the ones that are in the back of the house, which is a little off the, off the shore, off the winds. And I just wondered if they're going to come back or if they're dying.
Dan,
And we've had a huge problem with that this year. A lot of our forest health folks have taken that question. So it's not just on the lakeshore, but you've got one thing going against you there is because the winds are pretty brutal, I'm assuming, coming off there. But because of our extremely cold winter that we've had there, and even in the wintertime, there is moisture in the trees, moisture in those needles, and because it was so extreme, basically, it desiccated those and took the moisture right out of those needles. So those needles probably are not going to come back. That doesn't mean that the tree will not come back. If you have buds, if you look at the end of your limbs and their shoots there, they'll probably come out and refoliate with needles there. So I wouldn't do anything drastic and remove trees now, but we've had a lot of browning of spruce and pine throughout the state.
Larry, just to follow up, in some of the visits I've had with landowner or homeowners, a lot of this is with the white pine, not so much with the red pine. And white pine's unique in that the lower branches will quickly try to take over. So if the top buds are dead, and this happens a lot with, say, white pine tip weevil or deer damage, is that those lower branches will continue to grow because that's what we've seen is a lot of the upper stuff and the lower branches buried in the snow are okay. So you may have to be doing some training here over the coming years to favor one of those lower branches, and eventually it'll take over and that tree will maybe have a little bend to it, but it should be fine. So if you have two or three co-dominant branches, you might want to bend two of them down or even cut two of them out and let that dominant one. That way you'll get a nice straight tree instead of a white pine bush.
Okay, there we go. Thanks a lot, Vivian, for calling. I appreciate your call. Let's take a question from the audience. What's your name?
Hi, Larry, and thank you again for coming up to Bayfield. We've finally defrosted, sort of. My name is Tessa, and I live in Bayfield, a little north of Bayfield. I'm wondering if our panel of professionals can give us a prediction for the crop of tent caterpillars this year.
Ooh. What do you think, Jason?
Well, so remember we have two kinds of tent caterpillars up here. One is eastern tent caterpillar, and that's been around for a number of years up here. We've had, and they actually make the nests in the trees. And so if you see them, you right away in the spring, you can squish them with your hands. The ones we're all worried about, though, are the forest tent caterpillars. Those are the ones with the blue dots, and they'll cover your driveway. So the predictions that I've heard from our forest health specialists is they're starting to see the population build, and they wouldn't be surprised to see some coming this coming next couple of years. So be on the lookout. In the past, it's been a little bit spotty, so some areas have had it really bad. I think it was 2001 we had a most recent outbreak. So yeah, be looking for them.
All right. There you go. We have another question from the audience. Hi.
Yeah, Larry. My name is Richard Engelman from Presque Isle, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I tried growing my own seeds this year, and I haven't done that for a while. And it's like a giant sunflower like you got on your birthday card there. And they're getting rather leggy. Because of the ice and snow up here, I'm going to have problem putting these in the ground. Do I dig a hole to China, or do I just put a sort of coil it up in a small hole, or how do I
deal with that leggy plant? Yeah, that's a good question, Jason.
So there's two issues here. One is you want to make sure the transition from going outside or from inside to outside happens slowly, so the process of hardening it off. So you might bring it out on some cloudy days and leave it in the shade. The next day you bring it out, give it a little sun. Do this over a week or two to start to green it up and harden it off, and it'll actually build a waxy cuticle to protect it from the UV rays. Now, some plants like tomatoes that get leggy, you can plant them deeper and their stems will root, so you can overcome that just by planting deep. Sunflowers, I'm not sure, but I don't think you can plant them deep or you'll rot that stem. So you're going to have to just give it some support. It's going to be kind of tall and leggy, and that's just the way it is, but it'll fill out and strengthen up as the season goes. That's a challenge with these short seasons and when we have a delayed spring. So, you know, in the future, we always tend to start our plants too early because we get excited. So we can try to delay it or, you know, use the supplemental lighting to try to prevent it in the future.
Thank you. I've got another question, please. It's a seed question. It's a birdie question. Nothing touches my thistle seed anymore. I've had it for 2 years, and I've got a lot of it. And the yellow finches just don't eat it anymore. They go to the sunflower seed. So I wondered if anybody else has got this problem.
Well, that's a good question, and we may get some responses as the day goes along. I haven't noticed that in southern Wisconsin. They seem to still like my seed anyway. We'll find out. I'm sure we'll get some calls or some other people here maybe nodding or shaking their head. We'll hear about that. I want to give John and Eau Claire a chance to join us by phone. John, are you there?
Yes, I am there. I'm here, Larry. Thank you and happy birthday. Us listeners and audience participants here are very privileged to have such an expert panel today, so we're very grateful. I've got a question about buckthorn. And we've got some beautiful hardwood trees, and some of them are being overtaken by buckthorn. And it just seems like one of those things that you can cut them down and poison them or whatever, and they just seem to be coming back, and it's quite a large area. I'm wondering if there's any equipment that could come in or that we could rent that could help to eliminate them and poison it that way, or is it best to get some kind of a bulldozer or something in there? I'm just really kind of feeling overtaken by it.
Yeah, it doesn't make you out of wish you just give me a bulldozer and just go in there and dig it out. But that isn't going to work, is it, guys?
It's going to look nice that first year. So there, you can contact your DNR, and there's a, forget the exact name, Fecon or Tecon head on a, basically it's mounted on a skid steer, and that can grind the entire understory, so you can get rid of it that way. But all you're going to do is get more suckers coming out of the root system.
Yeah.
So it's a temporary fix. There's, you know, not a good answer for buckthorn except sweating and swearing.
Well, Don Kissinger, there is some chemical
What you can do in the fall is a good time to do this is pulling them or cutting them in the fall and then dabbing the stump or what's left of it and using glyphosate is the way to go. But as Jason said, this is not a one-year deal. I mean, it's something that you have to stay after for a number of years. And basically, if you just have one or two that you miss, they're going to come up in propensity. So it's something you really have to keep after.
I would just add that you probably should be careful that you don't create a really, really good seed bed for all of the buckthorn seeds that will be on the plants right at the moment.
Yeah, that's the problem with disturbing that soil. It just spreads them around and makes them more of them out there. Well, I thank you very much for that call, John. Just to remind you all, Jason Fishbach, Don Kissinger, and Art Odie, our guests today. I'm Larry Mueller from Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, broadcasting from Bayfield, Wisconsin. Thanks for joining us today for this edition of Garden Talk as we celebrate Bayfield in Bloom with a great audience and some great guests, Jason Fishbach, Don Kissinger, and Art Odie. Jason's our ag agent, UW Extension ag agent for Ashland and Bayfield counties. Don Kissinger, urban and community forestry coordinator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Art Odie, horticultural consultant, semi-retired from the Botanical Garden and Arboretum Management Program. So great to have them here, and thank you so much for listening in. Questions, call us at 1-800-642-1234. We're also taking questions from the audience, and we have another audience question. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Kathy. I live in Rice Lake. We have a large planting of poppies on the east side of our deck, and they're beautiful when they bloom, but when they're done, they kind of look nasty. And I don't know if we should be cutting them back, if we can put something else in there that'll take over, but once the poppies are done, it's not very pretty there. So what can we do?
Well, Art, do you want to take a crack at that one?
Well, I love poppies, and I have a number of them in my garden, and they do look bad when the blooms are over and the leaves begin to dry down. But I would just cut back the dry foliage, and I wouldn't be too aggressive about trying to control the looks of the foliage. I think that you will. Probably reduce the vigor of the plant if you do too much. I think we just have to put up with some of the appearance. That's a payback for getting the bloom, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right. We have another question from the audience. Hi.
Hi. I'm Cheryl from Superior. And a friend of mine just moved into a new house and found out this spring that he has a lot of pine trees that nothing is under. So he would like to know what he could plant in those bare spots underneath the pine trees, and wondering if he should be adding dirt to the base. Mm. Thank you.
All right.
Number one, don't add any soil around the base of the pine trees. That is very damaging to the surface roots, and particularly to the bark if you get soil more than an inch or two around the base of a tree. The other thing is that if there are large pine trees, you're going to have a lot of roots. So you're going to have a very selective planting locations there. There are a whole host of native things that that are shrubby that would be very easy to plant under the white pines. And if I were him, I would do a little research about what you would naturally find under white pines in the white pine woods and go with that.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
The nice thing about living up here is you're never too far away from a fairly naturalized forest environment. So if you go out with a guidebook and learn what plants are under a pine stand, one is going to tell you, what does well in that environment. And then up here we have a number of nurseries that sell northern native plants. So you can find most of what's growing naturally underneath those pine trees. And that's what you can plant under there. And you know that they're going to do well on those soils without really any extra work. So that's a great way to naturalize underneath the pine stands.
In fact, we have a native plant nursery that is with us as an exhibitor today.
Yeah, and I bet those native plant nursery folks know probably what's going to work well under a white pine stand or any other kind of stand for that matter. Yeah. Let's take another question from the audience.
Hello. My name is Bob Drevlo from town of Barksdale, south of Washburn here locally. And my wife got a little bit ambitious this year and was feeling anxious and planted some dahlias inside and potted them up on top of an in-floor heath, which gets them going really quickly. And they are a little bit too big, and I'm curious, can we nip them back? Can we just pinch them back? Do we plant them a little bit deeper, or what should we do? And it's still a little bit tender for them to put them out right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that it's probably a little early. What do you guys got for advice? Art, Odie?
First thing I do is put them in a cool location. Seriously.
Yeah.
Slow them down. You can probably almost stop their growth if you put them in a cool place where there's not much sunlight and just slow them down.
Yeah. Jason, anything from you?
How big are the pots that they're in now? Okay. So one thing you could do is just leave them in their pots the rest of the year. And if you want to put them in the garden, you can just dig them into the garden so you don't have to water them as much. Because if they're happy there, then it's just a simple process of gradually hardening them off as they go outside. So, and one way to kind of slow them down is don't put them out in the full blaring sun and the wind, but put them out in where it's a little bit cooler outside, but it's not, you know, it might bring them in at night. And that should work, and just leave them in the pots might be the simplest.
You know, I had a caller once who did some experimenting and talked about this. She had tomato plants and some other plants that she was growing, and she just did a little experiment where she, half the plants, she every time she walked by them, she would brush her hand over them and sort of move them around, and she thought, I wonder if that makes them stronger. And actually, she said those plants were hardier from the constant, you know, just every time she went by, she just gave them a little push, and that really actually helped make them stronger. I don't know, Don Kissinger, if that...
I guess I can relate that to trees, and that's why typically when you plant trees, many times people stake them, and if you do stake them, I would do it so it can sway, or don't stake them at all, because that movement back and forth does help their... The cells grow stronger and helps the trunk to be a lot better. Whereas if you just stake that in a certain area and you use something like a wire with hose and you keep it there for a number of years, everything on that trunk is growing except that area that's touching that hose. And when you take the hose off a few years later, I can guarantee you, if you're going to have any damage or any breakage, it's going to happen right there. Yep, it looks like an hourglass basically where that staking was to the trunk.
So there you have it. Every time you walk by your tomato plants, give them a little brush with your hand. We should probably take a call. A caller, Ron in Milton, up next. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Yes, I am calling in response to the gentleman who asked about buckthorn control in his woods. And we've been doing buckthorn control for a little over 20 years now in southern Wisconsin in the woods. And we use a Raco forestry mower to mow it down initially and then follow up with an herbicide of like Garlon 4 or Element 4. You have to wait until the resprouts get up to be about 2 or 3 feet tall and then foliar spray them. And then to maintain it for the long run, down here in southern Wisconsin, we do periodic prescribed burning in these oak and hickory woods. The oak and hickory will withstand more fire than the buckthorn and the honeysuckle, so that fire will actually kind of sort them out.
Yeah. You guys, my panel here of guests are nodding their head in agreement, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at before, where you can... work with your DNR. Now, that's a really aggressive approach, and it's going to, you know, you take out everything that's in that understory, but typically it gets that far along, it's nothing but buckthorn. And then you can treat the sprouts more aggressively, so you're sort of starting over. The fire, if you can work that out with your DNR, you can work it into your property management plan, can be a great option, especially in the oak lands. Now, the other approach for folks that don't want to go that far is sort of take, okay, here, what can I do at a minimum? And that's to make sure nothing gets to where it's setting fruit and flowering. So at least you're not spreading the buckthorn through seeds. Yeah. So cut out all those bigger ones, and you can treat those stumps. You're not going to get rid of buckthorn, but at least you can help contain it.
Yep, good points. And, Ron, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. I want to go to Green Bay next and talk with Ferd. Ferd, hi. Thank you for calling.
Okay. I responded to a gentleman who's having trouble with his birds not eating his thistle seeds. I experienced that a few years ago. I was told they were mildewed, and it doesn't show anything. So I went and bought some fresh thistle seed and hung it out there, and they were fine. They ate it all. I ended up showing out the whole batch of thistle seed that I had before.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point. I actually had one of my feeders kind of got away. I had it in a spot where it just really, I thought it'd be a good spot, but it wasn't a good spot. And I noticed that nothing was going to it, and I checked the feeder, and here it was mildewed, and I kicked myself in the rear end for not paying closer attention. I took it down and cleaned it out and moved it over a little bit, and the birds came back. So they'll stay away from mildewed seed. That at least some of them will. So that's a good point. Thanks, Ferd. And Rita in Green Bay.
Hello. Yes, we're selling my parents' house, and I need to transplant rhubarb and irises from their yard to mine, and I'm wondering how to go about doing that.
Well, the rhubarb should be pretty easy, shouldn't it, Jason?
Yeah, rhubarb's pretty straightforward. It's just you just divide them, so you can dig out the whole plant and divide it, or just cut out a chunk of the plant and then backfill a little bit. The question is more when in the late in the fall after everything is kind of browned down, or early in the spring. Now, up here, we're probably still in rhubarb transplant season, fairly. We're starting to get the plants pretty big. But further south, it might be past that time. The irises is a similar thing. In the fall, once everything's browned down, you can split those out and replant them. You don't plant them very deep, but that's typically the best time to do it.
All right, there you go. And I lost my screen, so I'm not sure who's up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, our Garden Talk edition. So let me turn to a question that that I was going to bring up with Don Kissinger, and that related to you planted trees this morning, you and Art, and reminded me, you know, this is the time of year you're going to, there's a lot of tree planting is going to be going on, and I thought of you guys the other day because I was going through the neighborhood and I see one of the trees where the surface roots, you can see, are circling around a kind of a large tree. And I thought, well, that's probably a goodbye to that tree. And what about proper planting on a tree as you put it in?
Well, that's one of the things I was talking to the kids about this morning. And basically, the tree tells you how deep your hole needs to be. And typically, what we like to see is something that's 2 to 3 times its width. But what you're going to look for, because a lot of the trees you get, if it's potted, which probably most of the consumers will purchase, you need to take soil away from the trunk until you find the depth where there's a root flare, where there's a substantially sized root that's growing right to the trunk. And sometimes that might be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 inches. So finding that and taking the soil away to that point and then measuring that depth and making sure that that root flare is level with the soil line, and if anything, maybe a little smidge higher because it's going to settle a little bit. But you want to make sure that it you do have that root flare level, because otherwise what you're stating before is the roots will girdle, circle the tree, and 5, 10 years later, it could succumb to that.
Yeah, and I'm seeing here and there. I went by a business that obviously has a landscaping outfit, but probably not a very good one. So I'm looking at their trees, and it's like a straight post right into the ground. There's no root flare at all on those fairly recently planted trees, and I'm thinking, They're not going to make it.
If basically you see that your tree looks like a telephone pole in the ground, you know that it's been planted too deep. So that's not a good situation.
We'll take a call next from Rice Lake. And Josh, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I've got it's a fish pond. And I went through and I put mother of thymes around it for a border, kind of growing between the rocks and stuff. This is the third year now. And the thing this year is that they're really, really thick. It's all dead on top. Can I cut those back for the fresh stuff to come back up? Or is it, what's happening with it? Because it's kind of dead looking underneath it.
Let's see, mother of thymes, like T-H-Y-M-E-S?
T-H-Y-M-E-S, yep.
Thymes? We got, we're all looking here, kind of a stumped look on our faces. Any guesses, Art?
My guess is that they just, your plants just had a tough winter, and I think you can cut them back pretty severely. If it's around the fish pond, I would also caution you that they shouldn't get too wet, because that thyme plant is going to want a little drier conditions.
All right, there we go. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. We'll also take questions from the audience. So if you have a question, anybody in the audience, just raise your hand, and Jennifer will be there lickety-split with her microphone, and you can ask your question. Don, I want to go back to you for just a minute. Another tree that I went by a woods in southern Wisconsin, and there were still some elms in there, and they were dead. And I was making note of that because I was kind of hoping to go back and check out the mushroom situation in that particular woods. But elm disease, the anything that's new or different with that?
I don't know if I'd say there's anything new or different, but there's many, you know, American elms that are out there that it seems like they grow great until they're about 10, 15 inch in diameter, yeah. And then Dutch elm disease gets them. So you get all pumped and think, boy, I've got a nice tree, and elms grow very fast, and then it does succumb. One thing to mention is that there are many disease-tolerant cultivars, varieties out there that can be grown throughout the state. I would say at least a half dozen to a dozen that are out there. Valley Forge, Accolade, Discovery, American Liberty. So there's a lot of, and these are disease-tolerant, meaning that they may get Dutch elm disease, but it's just the tip dieback. But basically, they're going to be a great tree. And I recommend planting disease-tolerant trees for my communities. They do a wonderful job, great shade, great shape. So that's my...
You know, that's really interesting, because those trees that I saw, they were all about 10 to 12-inch diameter trees, single one of them.
Yep, that seems to be the point that they get to, and then they succumb to DED.
Larry, if I may, I have a tree announcement that I've been waiting specifically for this program to announce. The cities of Ashland, Washburn, Bayfield, and the community of Red Cliff have been the recipients of a $50,000 approximately non-matching grant from the Forest Service's Great Lakes Clean Water Initiative, and we're very proud of that. We worked very hard to get that grant, and it's going to plant 150 trees in these four communities.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let's give that a hand. That's great.
Now, Larry, the good news continues.
Yeah, yes,
so
go ahead, Jason.
So a group of food producers in our region, farmers, and five school districts were awarded a grant recently. And each of the school districts will be putting up a high tunnel greenhouse, 24 by 48 feet long, to help with their school gardening program. So we're real excited to get the staff and the students out in the gardens. Remember, the farm to school is great, but up here we have a week in the spring and a week in the fall, because so with these high tunnels, we'll be able to have them out in the dirt and gardening in the fall until into December, and the spring starting in March. So we're excited to see this project happen.
Wow, that is wonderful. That's the kind of news we like to hear. And we've got a some more questions and some more callers online. Again, that number 1-800-642-1234. But we're going to take a quick break here. Just a reminder that today our guests, Art Odie, Don Kissinger, and Jason Fishbach, broadcasting with me, Larry Mueller, from Bayfield, Wisconsin, the Bayfield Pavilion. Gosh, it is a coolest building. I love this building. I wish you were all here as you listen. I wish you were all here with this great audience that we've got for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here for this edition of Garden Talk. We broadcast from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin. Wonderful audience, and great to have you listening in. Again, if you have questions, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Love to hear from you. And we have a question from the audience. Hi.
Hi there. My name's Roxanne, and I'm from here in Bayfield. And about a week ago, I heard you on the radio talking about pest controls, and you discussed some kind of a tick spray which people can put on their clothing, and I didn't get the name, and I know a lot of us worry about ticks when we're gardening. So if that comes to mind, I'd love to know.
Yeah, it's a permethrin-based product, and I'm trying to think of the name of the... as a matter of fact, just two nights ago, I was applying it to some clothes that my daughter and I are going to be out tramping around in the forest, and so I put it on because it'll kill the ticks, and it'll last about 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, and it's permethrin is the basic ingredient, and permethrin is what is used to treat head lice in kids. So in contact with it can be okay, but the way it's applied not to the body, it's applied to your clothing. So if you look for tick control aerosols, look for the permethrin name. And it's been very, at least Phil Pelletieri feels like it's the most effective. And Jason, I don't know if you...
Yeah, just a second. That it's sort of... cost-benefit or risk analysis to some degree, because it is an insecticide that you're applying on your clothes, right? So, number one, be very careful that you read the label of the product on how to use it. And number two, it's, you know, you don't necessarily have to put it on every time you go outside. You might save that for when you're out walking on brushy trails or you're going a walk with your dog or something. It's not something you need if you're just going to be out in your lawn mowing it or something. But it's up to you. And just be aware that it is an insecticide. You do need to read the label.
That is a derivative of marigolds, so I guess you could tie some marigolds around your ankles.
there you go, Art. I like that. Well, I've used it now for a couple of years. Although I have to say, Jason, Sandy Sawchuk, who is a veterinarian, I guess I have on my show, wound up with a tick. Kind of the new tick, the bad one, that's Rocky Mountain spotted fever tick. And she got it while she was fooling around on her lawn with the dogs. Right. So it is. Ticks are appearing on people's lawns now. So you still need to be vigilant. Although I certainly agree with you. You wouldn't be putting product on just to go out in the lawn. But it's still worth it to... kind of check yourself, especially if you've got some higher grass or shrubs that you're nearby, because you're likely going to find ticks. And we have another question from the audience.
My name is Fran, and I'm from Bayfield. And about 3 years ago, I planted a cherry tree, and it's doing pretty good, but I noticed that there is one of those roots that's curling around the base. And I was tempted to try to cut it, but I didn't want to kill the tree. Should I, or should I just leave it?
I guess, so 3 years ago, the tree is fairly established at this point in time?
Yes. Yes.
And how big around is that root right now?
It's about, it's bigger than my thumb. It's pretty good size.
Okay. I think what you could do is at the base of it, you know, find where that is and find where it finishes or where it's around the trunk. Those two places, if you can snip that off easily, I think that you could do that. If you've got 3 years out, that means you've got some pretty good width in your growth of your roots that are there right now. So I think that would be appropriate.
All right. Very good. Let's take a question from a phone. And Pam in Sun Prairie has a cherry tree question, too. So let's go to her. Hi, Pam.
Hello. I have a Canadian cherry tree that was planted by a tree planting company about 7 years ago. And my problem is that all those little shoots that come up around it for about a radius of, 5 feet around, and I'm snipping those off constantly. And what makes a tree send out all those little shoots?
So you got it from a nursery in Canada, or it's a Canadian dwarf cherry variety? Do you have any idea?
Yes. I got it here in this country, yeah.
Got it. I wonder if it might be, there was an early release of a Canadian dwarf cherry called Carmine Jewel, and most of those new Canadian tart cherries have some parentage in the background that are shrubs, and so it's not uncommon to have some suckering from the base or from the crown. Otherwise, trees typically will sprout from the base or even from the roots if they're under some sort of stress, whether that's moisture stress or had some damage to the trunk or some of the buds are being fed upon or their deer browse or anything that stresses that tree might result in some suckering. All you can do is evaluate the tree, try to get as healthy as you can, and just remove those suckers.
All right. There you go. Thank you, Pam. And let's take a call as well from Diane in Milwaukee. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Great. Say, I have a question about elm tree removal. We have several in our yard. One was quite large when we moved in and half dead, and we took it down and took out the big roots that it had and tried to follow them for a while. But the problem is that these elm tree roots don't seem to die. They keep sending up suckers or little shoots all over. They've crawled under the walk and into where other shrubs are. Is there some way to discourage these elm tree shoots from coming up from all the little feeder roots that are still under the ground?
How long has it been on that tree?
When did we cut it down?
Cut down?
About 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Oh. Don, what do you think? I've 8 years, I would have thought that by this time.
I don't have an answer for you. I apologize. I guess keeping at it, because that's about all that I can think of. Any others?
Just keep whacking them down, and I suppose you could have, once again, you could probably do a chemical if you wanted to, but.
It won't solve your problem, but I'm just wondering whether what you're seeing is not root sprouts, but seedlings, because elm trees produce a lot of seed, and if you've got numerous elm trees still producing seed in your area, you might just be seeing seed sprouts.
That's a possibility. So I guess you keep mowing them down, Diane, and that's the best we can offer today. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And another question from the audience.
Hi, my name's Cy from Fish Creek in Door County, and on our acreage, we have probably a 20-acre parcel that has really old apple trees on it. They're probably more than 50 years old, and they're very gnarly, and is there any way of reclaiming them? And I'm assuming there's a process. What would that be?
Yeah, it's amazing how long those old apple trees can hang on, and they look terrible, and they're still hanging on. Half the bark is gone or half the inside of the tree is gone. They're still alive. So what you're trying to do is promote new wood, and you do that by making some pruning cuts and favoring the new shoots that come out of those pruning cuts, the suckers, and then gradually you're cutting out with a chainsaw some of that older wood. Now, the problem is, you know, you can't totally regenerate the trunk. So the apple tree will last as long as the main trunk survives. But everything above that point, you should be able to recycle through and have some pretty good wood. Now, you're in a unique place here in Bayfield where you can see a lot of these old trees. So if you drive through the orchards here before you go home, you'll see how some of these old trees are managed. And there's some old wood, but a lot of it's new wood, just 3 or 4 years old, and they just keep recycling the old wood and then use the or promote or train that new wood.
Just as an aside, the apple tree that produced the apple that legend has, it fell on Newton's head and was the progenitor of the law of gravity. A few years ago, it was still alive, and that's, what, 400 years?
Wow. Well, that's a little-known fact, or at least I didn't know it.
I hope I'm not telling an urban legend, but that...
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Deborah in Oak Creek. Hi, do you have a question for us? Deborah in Oak... Yeah,
hello?
There we go. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I have a quick question.
Hi.
Hi. I live in Oak Creek, and the soil in our backyard, it doesn't seem to absorb water. So when it rains, there are like pools of water in the backyard. There was an old willow tree that was planted, but we took it down about a week ago because it wasn't doing any good anymore. We're looking to plant a tree that will absorb water. Somebody mentioned river birch. And so I wanted to find out if there, I mean, you have any ideas of a tree that can absorb water and also shrubs that can absorb water. We were looking to make some fence too with maybe some shrubs.
All right. Art Odie, let's start with you.
There's so many things. Swamp white oak would be a good tree. In your area, I think you could probably just, if you're interested in an oddity, you could probably grow a bald cypress there. Also, the native tamarack would do beautifully for you, and they'll survive and pump a lot of moisture out of the soil for you. There are any number of things, and elms as well, or go back to your willow tree.
Those all good options.
Yeah, kind of a fun project if you spend some time on lawn looking for living willow fences. And you can actually take cuttings from willow, and you want to use some native shrub willow if you can find it, and poke those sticks in the ground. You kind of arrange them in a lattice work, and then as those willow shoots grow, you can kind of weave them together. So you end up with this living willow fence that's pretty narrow, so it doesn't take up your whole yard, right? It might only be a foot or two wide. And it grows so fast that you'll have a fence in no time, and you can have fun weaving it into unique shapes and that kind of thing. So spend some time online. You'll see some great pictures that folks have done.
That is very cool. Another thing that I've learned today. Thanks a lot for that call, Deborah. Susie and Toma, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. About 4 years ago, my husband and I built a new home, and we had it landscaped, and some of the soil that we received right by our house for a garden, for our, my garden and also for our grass, was soil from an area where they're making a new cranberry marsh. And we have struggled to have grass grow and for my flowers. Even my irises and daylilies are struggling in this soil. So we have decided to dig the soil up, and now we want to know what we should do with it.
Well, I have a suggestion. If you are still in contact or know those cranberry producers, they have from the processing plants all the leaves that come out when they're cleaning, and they compost those leaves, and it makes fantastic compost. And that's what you need. You need something to hold moisture in that sandy soil. You know, and until you do that, you're going to have a hard time growing anything because it dries out so fast. Other than that, it's, you know, finding a new source that has a higher organic matter content.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, while I'm thinking about it, as we broadcast here from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin, lots of people help to make this all happen. And I do want to mention some special thanks to so many people that we've had here. John Munson, our regional manager, certainly. John Talcott, our engineer, doing a great job this morning. Jennifer Dargan, who is working the microphone right now back in Madison. We have Cynthia Schuster and Dave Potratz. And then, of course, our guests today, Jason Fishbach, Jason's University of Wisconsin Extension Ag Agent with Ashland and Bayfield Counties, Don Kissinger, Don's the Urban and Community Forestry Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and Art Odie, of course, Art's horticulture consultant extraordinaire. Great to have them all here. Tim Allen as well, helping us out, and Judith Sears Poisson, my producer, who normally is with us. She is in Paris, France. As tough duty for her. As we speak, Judith is married to a guy from Paris, and so they get to go back and visit his parents once in a while, and she's doing that. So a big thanks to virtually everybody who's been involved in the program. It's always a great pleasure to be here. Bayfield in Bloom is something, the event itself is 12 years old, I believe. It's an event that runs for, it's not just today, believe me, it runs for about a month, if I'm not mistaken. And it's a chance for you to see not only Bayfield, but Washburn and some of the neighboring communities, what they've done with their flowers and with their landscaping. It's just absolutely fantastic what they do, and I look forward to doing it and visiting here every year, and I hope you look forward to listening to the program and answering all of your questions here on the Ideas Network for Garden Talk. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller as we broadcast from the Bayfield Pavilion in Bayfield, Wisconsin to kick off Bayfield in Bloom with a great audience here. Love to see everybody, and thank you for listening in. If you couldn't be here, I'm glad you're listening in, and if you have a question, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Anybody in our audience, if you have a question, raise your hand, and Jennifer Dargan will be right there with a microphone to get that question. And Jennifer, I think you have someone.
Hi, I'm Donna from Washburn. I am gardening in a new-to-me spot and finding a lot of earwigs. And I don't mean just a couple. I mean a lot that are eating everything in sight. I've tried removing all the mulch from around beds and from around the edges of the house, but they're still everywhere. Any suggestions?
Earwigs are tough.
It's sort of like our buckthorn question, right? It's just persistence, and it's trying to dry out that environment as best you can, and eventually they're going to go somewhere else. There's no real magic solution to this one. The shadier areas, right, they stay wetter longer, so pay attention to those. Otherwise, that's about all we can.
One of the things that Phil Pelletieri suggested was to sort of knock down the numbers is to have a mat of some sort that you can set out near your area, and then lift that mat up after the sun's out, and you'll find them, many of them congregating under the mat, and you can just pick them up and get rid of them that way. But they're not that much fun to pick up and hold either, to be perfectly honest. But there's not a lot else, unfortunately. And let's go to Bill in Rock County, who has a question via phone. Hi, Bill.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for the program and your guests. I'm just curious. Last fall, we were out in California to see the big redwoods, sequoias and such. And until, really, from what I understand, the only state where we find them, are they not able to grow in Wisconsin?
Art Odie, what do you think?
Well, it's such an entirely different environment here. Most of the big trees, you're looking at very high rainfall and very high snowfall environments. And most trees like that won't really survive in our Midwest continental summer environment. You can grow them. They'll grow for a while, but they aren't going to do an awful lot for you.
Yeah. I saw a sad picture of a giant redwood where somebody had taken a chainsaw to it to cut this enormous burl out of it. I don't know if any of you saw that. It turned up on my Facebook page. It was just a very sad thing because this is a huge, huge tree. We're talking 10-foot diameter or something, and half of the base was cut out for this burl. I guess they caught the person, which was the only good part of it, unfortunately. Kimberly in Oneida has a question. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. So my neighbor, who is a really nice guy, but he is kind of the guy, if you hand him a nickel, he'd squeeze it till he turned into a dime, and then he'd say that it was awfully small. So I don't think he meant to share with me when he did this, but he did. He planted crown vetch in his ditch, and my ditch abuts his ditch, and that ditch abuts my raspberry patch in my garden. So last year I pulled out as much as I could by hand, and then this year I put down some clear plastic to see if I could cause it to grow quickly and die off. But I am finding still little bits of crown vetch, and right now so they started just last week coming up. They're about an inch tall, and now they're probably about 4 inches tall. And I am trying to transition to organic gardening. So what can I do short of spraying these things with Roundup to get rid of it? Because it's moved a good 40 feet since the 4 or 5 years ago when you put it in.
Yeah. Jason, do you have any ideas?
Well, if the solarization, you might try the black plastic mulch and then plant into that, or use landscape fabric and plant into that, or just leave some heavy black fabric on and kill it off that way instead of the clear plastic. Otherwise, it's just a lot of tillage to try to keep everything from sprouting and eventually starve it out. The problem with the vetches is they have hard seed, which means it lies dormant for a long time, and so you're going to have this for a while. Ideally, you're going to have to buddy up with your neighbor and somehow control it in that ditch. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting this forever, I'm afraid.
Sorry, Kimberly. I'm glad you don't live next to me, to be honest. Let's go to Ellen in Waupun. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have a question about a plant in our backyard. It happens to be a black lace sambucus, but at the base of the stems that come out of the ground, this year we've seen a yellow growth on it that it can be scraped off, but it obviously is something alive and spreading. And I'm wondering, is that something that could be deadly to the bush?
Art Odie?
Can you describe what it looks like over and above the color?
It's a very bright yellow, and it's as I scraped it off, it's not real thick, maybe eighth of an inch thick on there. And there were several branches that were affected by it.
I think you've just got a fungal growth there. I couldn't tell you what it is, but trees often attract fungi and mosses and whatever, and most of those things are not parasitic. They're simply epiphytic, living on the branches. I would just keep wiping it off, and it'll probably eventually go away.
Yeah.
As long as it isn't actually a plant that has a stem and looks like a plant, if it's just simply looks like it's been painted on there and it's just a colorful growth, I think that's all you can do. Otherwise, if it had a twining stem and no green leaves and just the twining stem, that would be dodder.
Hmm. Okay. Thanks, Ellen. Thank you for calling. And we'll take a question from the audience again. Hi.
Yeah. Randy Levine from Lake Nebagman. I got a question about our stilbies. We can't get them to bloom very well. I have divided them. They get plenty of water. And we do put compost around every spring on them. But the foliage looks beautiful, but we don't get many blooms on them.
What do you think, Jason?
So I think they might be, the foliage might be too beautiful. They might be getting too much nitrogen, perhaps. Okay, but even the compost, if it depends what it's coming from, might have some nutrient in it. Otherwise, even though they're somewhat adapted to the shade, they do need some sun in order to bloom. So I wonder if they might not be getting enough sun. It's kind of have to see the site to judge it, but that those are two things that came to mind.
Okay. All right, let's take a call from Susan in Summit next. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have probably 100 trees that line our quarter-mile driveway, and they're long-needle pines of some sort. I'm not sure what kind. But someone came by, a friend of ours, and said that we've got bark beetles in them, and they're turning around, and the trunks look like they almost like woodpeckers have attacked, and they've got sap oozing out, and they're gradually getting worse and worse. And I'm just wondering if this is something that's going to kill the trees, if we're going to have to cut them down, and if we're going to have to, and how we go about replacing them.
So how large are these trees right now as far as diameter of the trunk?
Diameter of the trunk, probably 8 inches. 6, 8 inches.
Okay. Yeah, that I don't know what to tell you. That is a concern, especially because you're having woodpeckers, sapsuckers, something coming to it to either create a nesting area or going after the insect that is inside there. So the beetles are something that I guess the one thing is this area getting, does it get enough water? Because typically, if there are bark beetles and the tree has enough water, it can push those beetles out, and the tree has its own defense mechanism.
Well, we don't have a mechanism to water the trees.
No, but I mean, are you getting, do you have sand in your soil, or is it more clay?
Yes, it's pretty sandy soil.
Okay. So to me, that means that the water isn't as available as it could be, so that we may have to supplement that a bit. But basically, if you have these holes on there from some type of bird that's affecting it, that means you probably have some type of beetles that are also in there as well. So it's a tough situation. I would recommend potentially having a certified arborist come out and take a look at those trees to give you a better indication.
You've got a lot of trees there, and that's a pretty valuable bit of your property, and I think Don's probably right. It's good, and maybe Jason, you'd.
Yeah, I was just going to say one recommendation going forward is it sounds like pine and graver beetles or roundhead borers or something, and typically they're going to attack stressed pine trees, whether they're white or red pine. But going forward, we expect that we're going to see more of these insect outbreaks if we see more fluctuating climates, which means the way you defend yourself against that is diversity in your tree plantings, especially if you've got a fairly highly, you know, profile planting like along a driveway. Is if you do see these die, talk to an arborist, figure out what the best species are for your site, and do a mix of them. So a mix of conifers, a mix of deciduous trees. You know, if it's a sandy site, you might be looking at white pine, jack pine, red oak, pin oak, you know, anything you can do so that when the next bug comes along, you don't lose all the trees. You just lose a handful of them.
Yeah, that's very, very good advice, and a piece of advice that a lot of our municipalities didn't take after Dutch elm disease took the elms. Instead of getting a diversity, as was being discussed, we got off onto ash trees, and I know several municipalities that planted almost nothing but ash, and it's, I mean, we can control it, but it gets pretty expensive when you got thousands of trees.
Larry, it goes beyond ash trees and elm trees, too. Most communities, at least in the northern part of the state, have way too many maple trees, and the next thing that comes along is likely to affect the maples, and then we'll be doing this all over again. So the Don can tell us more about what kind of a mix of tree species one should have in a municipal planting.
You know, in Wisconsin, probably the big four trees, if you look at municipalities planting and probably residents planting, because they mimic what municipalities plant, are lindens or basswoods, honey locusts, maples, and ash trees. And in the Northwoods, which is the area that I work in, maples are the biggest, I don't want to say problem because it's a state tree, but I have municipalities that plant 40, 50, sometimes 60% of their street and parkland trees are in maples. So lindens and honey locusts, we don't have a whole lot of that, and we can plant more of those. But there's a whole plethora of species out there that you can plant. But and even with the ash trees, as Larry was saying, when we got away from elms, the Dutch elm disease, we did plant a fair amount. But in the north, really, it's not. It's at 25, maybe 30%. In communities, what we recommend is no more than 10% of any one genus, so maples or oaks or lindens or catalpas or hackberries. So if you can keep it to 10% in communities, that's the diversity that we want at least.
I probably mentioned this on the show in the past, but I have occasion to get to Saskatchewan fairly often, and Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, if you've I was shocked when I got there because the entire town is elm trees, elms that are 100 years old. And the elm bark beetle hadn't gotten up there yet because of the cold, but the climate change now has it's making its way there. If you want to see a town that is all elms like we used to have in Wisconsin, you might soon visit Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, because I'm a little afraid they're going to be losing a lot of their elm trees.
Just don't take your firewood with, right?
Yeah, just don't. No, don't take your firewood. That's for sure. We have. Let's go to Mandy in DeSoto next. Hi, Mandy. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. Good morning. There hasn't been a lot of talk about diversity until just now, but I'd like to put a plug in for our native plants that are native to your area, whether you're way up north or down south, and especially for the milkweeds and other native plants that would help our pollinators. They're endangered, and rather than talking rhododendrons and daffodils and things, I think we need to increase the diversity of our native plants, whatever is appropriate to your area. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Except maples.
Yeah, except maples. But you agree with that, Art?
By and large, but I've been a proponent of native plants ever since I was in graduate school and did my thesis on prairie restoration. However, when it comes to gardening and landscaping and any other kind of home gardening, horticultural endeavor, whatever, you have to remember that gardening and landscaping are not just about native plants. It's also about plants that are useful. It's about cultural traditions that come from other parts of the world. It's about artistry. It's about a broad view of the world. And I'm very much in favor and agree with much of the native plant movement, but there are other aspects to gardening and other aspects to life as well.
Yeah, I think that was well put. It was very well put. Thank you, Mandy. I want to give Cindy in Antioch, Illinois, a chance to join in, too.
Hi.
Cindy, hi.
I have a North Star sour cherry tree that has failed after about, I don't know, maybe 8 years and many wonderful harvests. It began to get this oozing sap on it, and I tried to open it up and see, you know, if there was an insect in there, but I couldn't find anything. And the bottom line is we ripped it out, and I'm wondering if I can plant another North Star cherry tree in the same site.
So what was causing that, it's bacterial ooze, and it's a bacterial blight infection. It's very, very common in cherry or tart cherries, and that's eventually what will kill all tart cherries. That's why they don't last as long as we wish they would. So you've got that disease, you've got that bacteria in your in your garden. So if you replant with the same cherry tree, you're likely to get it again. So if you can at least move it around or give it a few years rest and then try, you could try it again. Overall, we call these kinds of things replant disease. So whether you're putting an apple back into an apple or pear back into pear, you just carry over the same suite of disease organisms and they just reinfect the same tree.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Thank you, Cindy, for calling. Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you, and welcome. Have a nice time up north. I'm calling a suggestion for the woman in the audience who was asking about earwigs. We call them chicken candy. Chickens love them, absolutely love them, and a small flock of chickens is a treat in terms of personality and just antics that are, they're a lot of fun to watch, and they give you eggs, and if you're not a vegetarian, they give you meat eventually also. But they absolutely love earwigs, as well as earthworms and a lot of other insects as well.
Ah, a good point. Thank you, Stella, for calling. And actually, we did a show not too long ago about chickens, and there's so many small flocks now that are turning up in communities where the zoning has been changed. As long as there aren't any roosters, you can have a small flock of chickens in Madison, for example. And Jason, I imagine there's some...
Yeah, especially the more rural you are, the more the opportunities. The only problem with chickens in the garden is they scratch, and so they scratch everything and can destroy a lot of plants. But where they can be really effective is underneath fruit trees. They will pick apart the old leaves. They'll pick apart the fallen the drops. That's particularly effective against plum curculio. So if you're trying to grow plums, it's really hard to do it because of the plum curculio. Now, there's some food safety concerns where you've got the chicken manure underneath the trees. So you have to be careful with the timing. But it can be a real effective tool of the chickens or ducks or any of those critters. But just remember, everything else out there likes to eat those things too, especially at night.
Yeah. I think I'll start a rent-a-chicken business.
You know, there are there's a couple companies in the state doing just that, Art.
Really?
Yeah, they'll lease you a chicken, you keep it for 6 months or 3 months, and then you take it back.
I wouldn't take it back.
Well, you can also lease goats, too. There's a couple of operations that, because goats will eat, they'll eat all those shrubs and terrible brush and bushes that we want to get rid of. Isn't that right, Don?
I think that there may be some that eat buckthorn, too.
Yeah, there are some that will eat buckthorn. There really are some that will eat buckthorn.
Yep, seriously.
That's a great idea.
And it's environmentally okay. And how they eat buckthorn, I don't know, but they can eat, actually, they'll decimate buckthorn. And there's a couple of people who have that business in Wisconsin and elsewhere. There's a fellow in California, apparently, that's got several flocks and makes a pretty good dollar. So there you have it. And, oh, my goodness. How do we get on to goats? you never know what's going to happen on a garden talk show, do you? It's always wonderful to be able to broadcast from Bayfield. We've had a lot of fun here in the last 12 years, and it always happens around my birthday. So I always get a great birthday card, and I get a great birthday cake, and a chance to visit with some great people, including my guests today, Art Odie, Don Kissinger, and Jason Fishbach, who have done a marvelous job, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again. And I want to thank the audience today for being with us. Thank you so much for coming today. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.